Chapter 15. Screech Bling summoned one of the younger Trogs, hissed and clicked some instructions to them, and sent them off on an errand. Then he looked up at Nico.
"Follow me," he said.
He led the way very badly, Nico thought, since he didn't seem to care if Nico and Will kept pace with him back into the main cavern, then through a series of side tunnels. They passed a row of sleeping quarters where younger Trogs were napping on beds of woven bioluminescent moss.
"You know, before this trip," said Will, struggling to keep up, I didn't know if the Troglodytes slept at all, since there's no day or night underground."
"We all must eventually," Screech Bling called out. "We're not so different from you, son of Apollo."
Nico caught a glimpse of Will's face as they scurried along, and he was sure it was a little redder. Screech Bling cut a sharp right into a small circular room dominated by a round conference table. Three other Troglodytes were already there, milling about anxiously. As soon as Will and Nico passed through the entrance, a fourth Trog, wearing a thick parka and at least three separate beanies stacked atop one another, pushed a large boulder across the doorway with her shoulder, sealing them all in. Will raised an eyebrow.
"Screech Bling, what is this?"
"This is our council," said the female troglodyte, "and I am Howl Smith, its leader."
She bowed. The others introduced themselves as well. There was Clack Jones, who wore a Stetson on top of a baseball cap. Then Shriek Vibes, who appropriately wore an orange bucket hat with a jack-o'-lantern on it. The fifth member of the council was a scrawny troglodyte named His Majesty. Their name was absolutely the greatest Nico had ever heard, but he was surprised that they were not wearing a hat at all. Nico pointed to the Trog's bare head.
"Missing something?"
His Majesty turned away.
"I am sensitive about it," they said. I have not found the right hat for me."
Screech Bling patted them on the shoulder.
"In time, His Majesty."
His Majesty sniffled, then glanced at Nico.
"Thank you for helping us find a new home."
"Indeed," said Howl Smith loudly.
"It is perfect for us," agreed Shriek Vibes.
"I am confused, though. Why have we called this council meeting?"
Screech Bling raised his hands.
"I called this meeting at the request of our demigod friend, Nico D'Angelo. He has important information to share about the changey smell."
The other council members muttered apprehensively, then took their places around the table. Nico and Will were seated to the left of Howl Smith.
"Speak, Nico D'Angelo," Howl Smith said. "Though our new headquarters is located where few could ever find us, we are still in the underworld, where many creatures, monsters, and spirits could prey on us. We must always be vigilant. If you know the source of the change we have smelled, you must share."
Nico swallowed his nerves. "It's a theory," he said. "But I think I'm right. I believe what you are sensing, who you are sensing, is Nyx." At the utterance of her name, the troglodytes let loose a frenzy of clicks and clacks, hisses and shrieks, snarls and pops.
"Wait," Will murmured to him. "Are you talking about the goddess of night? That Nyx?"
Before Nico could answer, Howl Smith whistled for the group's silence.
"If true, this is most serious, Nico D'Angelo."
She glanced at Will.
"As for your question, son of Apollo, Nyx is no mere god. She is a protogenos."
Will looked nervous, like he'd been caught in a pop quiz.
I feel like I should know that word, but remind me again."
"A protogenos," said Nico. "A primordial goddess, born before the Olympian gods, or even the Titans."
"They are the constants of our existence," added Shriek Vibes. "The fundamental powers of the cosmos,"
His Majesty said.
"They are really awful," said Clack Jones.
"And we've actually already met one," Nico reminded Will.
"Gaia." Will frowned.
Oh, great. So we're dealing with Gaia 2.0?
Well, no, said Nico.
A spark of hope kindled in Will's eyes, which was why Nico hated what he had to say next.
I think Nick's may be worse, he grumbled.
Will's mouth dropped open.
Worse? How is that even possible?
She is the goddess of pure darkness, said Howell Smith.
Mother of hellhounds, added Clack Jones.
And demons.
And I've met her, said Nico.
When?
Will asked sharply. Nico watched him come to the realization that there were still things, big things, that Nico had never shared, and dread filled his own heart.
I never told you, he admitted, his voice soft. I never told anyone. Not Chiron, not Mr. D, not Percy or Annabeth, or...
He couldn't bring himself to add Jason's name, not so close to the land of the dead. He felt the gaze of the troglodytes as they watched him in anticipation. But it was Will he focused on. Nico was used to people looking at him with a mixture of sadness, awe, and maybe a touch of pity in their eyes. How could he blame them? There was such a relentless darkness to Nico's story. But Will didn't look at him like that. He looked hurt. And that was worse.
I just couldn't talk about it, Nico said. I tried to tell people the minimum about what happened to me in Tartarus. I only hinted at what actually happened down there, kind of hoping no one would ever ask me for more.
And they hadn't, Nico thought. Even his closest friends had respected his silence. Or maybe they were just too terrified of learning the details. Will's expression softened. He ran his fingers through Nico's hair.
I get it. You don't have to tell me. You're the only one who can decide whether talking about it will help. And if it won't, I don't want to re-traumatize you.
Nico marveled how Will could shift from being hurt to being a caregiver so quickly. He was like one of those dent-resistant cars that just popped back into their original shape no matter how bad the fender bender. Nico wanted to believe that he could choose not to share. He wanted to disappear into Will's light and warmth, to purge the memory that was awakening in him. But he shook his head.
No, Will, I think I need to tell you this.
Nico wiped his face, annoyed that it was already wet with tears. He faced the Trog Council.
You all need to hear what really happened to me the last time I was in Tartarus.
Chapter 16. Nico had walked for a few hours over the grim and lifeless terrain, past his father's palace and the fields of Asphodel, before he'd found the cave. He wasn't sure what he'd been expecting. The entrance to Tartarus looked like, well... a hole in the ground. Nothing special. Surrounded by enormous boulders, the pitch-black entrance sank into the earth at a steep angle. Maybe the air coming out of it was a little warmer than the rest of the underworld, like the exhalations of a living creature. Otherwise, yeah, it was a cave, very cave-like, all things considered. So, this was it. For the entrance to the worst place in all existence, it felt oddly anticlimactic. But if the doors of death were down there, then maybe Nico could close them and stop Gaia before things got worse. Things always get worse, he thought. Don't let your guard down. The irony, of course, was that as he stood there, worried about what lay ahead of him, he didn't sense the thing coming up behind him. By the time he heard its hiss and spun around to meet it, the chimera was upon him. It was twice Nico's size, its lion's maw caked in dirt and blood, its shaggy goat body swarmed with blowflies, and its scaly tail lashed back and forth like a diamondback rattlesnake. Nico whipped out his Stygian iron sword, but it didn't matter. It was the tail of the other monster that caught him across the chest. Nico slammed against the nearest boulder, the breath knocked out of him.
Nico D'Angelo, said a gloating voice. This time, you don't have anywhere to escape to.
He tried to suck in air, but it was like a giant had clasped their hands around his chest. He pushed himself upright, pointing the tip of his sword toward Nona? Nico immediately felt ashamed for making that comparison, but the creature looming over him did look a lot like his grandmother back in 1930s Venice. Her coiffed hair was gunmetal gray, her stout upper body clothed in a faded flower print dress and a hand-knit sweater. But Nico's grandmother hadn't had eyes slitted like a reptile's, a flickering forked tongue, or a massive snake's trunk instead of legs.
You know, said Nico, you could just say hello instead of trying to kill me.
I am the mother of monsters, she said, her voice thick with bile. You will address me as Echidna.
Like that hedgehog animal?
She cast a baleful glare at her chimera companion.
Every time, why do they say that every time?
Well, Nico said, you did name yourself after the animal.
This seemed like a reasonable point to Nico, but judging from the way Echidna bared her fangs, she did not agree.
First of all, it's not a hedgehog, she said. It's related to the anteater. Secondly, Australia named it after me. Do you honestly think I would allow myself to be linked to such a lonely creature?
Hedgehogs are pretty cute, he said,
his mind running calculations on how he could get out of this mess without being slaughtered. I'd be flattered.
This is why I hate demigods, she said. You think you can joke and distract your way out of everything. That Percy Jackson also thought he could escape me.
At the mention of Percy's name, Nico's heart skipped a beat. From what I heard, he didn't escape because you never actually captured him, she sneered.
A mere technicality.
I don't know. If you look up the definition of the word escape.
Enough!
Echidna roared.
If I wanted you dead, Nico D'Angelo, I would have already killed you. We are only here to bear witness and to make sure you don't lose your nerve.
The chimera stepped forward, forcing Nico back toward the cave's entrance. The warm breeze from the chasm seemed to wrap around him, pulling him closer.
Do you sense it now?
Asked Echidna, her forked tongue darting between her fangs.
That is your destiny.
Nico's feet slid against the dirt as if he were already on an incline. He tried to take a step forward, but it was pointless. His feet slipped out from under him, and he nearly cracked his jaw on the ground. Echidna laughed.
You're right where Gaia wants you.
Nico dug his fingers into the dirt, but he was moving too quickly.
Say hello to all my monster friends, she called.
The terrible gravity of Tartarus grasped Nico, and he plunged into the pit. He fell. Not for long. For an eternity. At last, he crash-landed against a hard surface, and for the second time that day, he got the wind knocked out of him. Every bone in his body should have been broken, but somehow, he forced himself to move. He got to his hands and knees. His muscles screamed in protest. Something slithered past him in the darkness, grazing his shoulder. He swung his sword in that direction, hoping to strike something. A piercing shriek was his answer. He hoisted himself up, scrambling for purchase on the rough ground. In the purple glow of his blade, all he could see were shadows dancing around him.
Who's there?
Nico yelled. He was met with laughter, a sick, phlegmy sound. As he moved forward, his sword held aloft, something brushed his neck. He screamed and swatted at it. Then a voice giggled in his other ear. It sounded like a demonic toddler. Knowing his luck, it probably was. Nico pressed on until he perceived a dim light in the distance. Still, he could see nothing of his surroundings. He'd thought he understood darkness. But now he realized he'd been thinking of the shadows here all wrong. They didn't recede in the glow of his blade. Instead, they thickened stubbornly, clinging to him like some sort of mist or fog. It was as if Tartarus were alive, sending antibodies to attack him as a foreign invader. He trudged forward toward the distant red glow. The scent on the breeze turned sharp and bitter.
Finally, he staggered out of the shadow fog. Nico nearly collapsed at what he saw. Spreading to the horizon was a blood-red landscape of hills and crags, dotted with twisted, blackened trees. Noxious green clouds drifted through the air and clung to the valleys. And just below him, on a flattened plain of crushed rock and volcanic glass, Gaia's army was preparing for war. Hyperborean giants towered above the other troops like living blue siege towers. Legions of cyclops rummaged through mounds of armor and weapons, looking for the best quality gear. Packs of wolves prowled the perimeter, occasionally surrounding some unfortunate monster straggler and taking them out for lunch. A herd of drakons wove in and out of the ranks, trampling anything too slow to get out of their way. "Oh, Hades," Nico murmured, which was exactly when three basilisks raised their heads to look at him. Nico knew what they were instantly. Not many creatures looked like cobras with miniature deer antlers, but he knew better than to meet their yellow lamp-like gaze. Instead, he turned and ran. He heard their blood-chilling screeches behind him, but he refused to look back. Whatever he was running toward, it had to be better than the 10,000-to-1 odds behind him. The ground gave with each step like spongy turf. Off to his left, a green bank of fog drifted across a marsh. He thought of heading into it, for cover at least, but he didn't know what that fog was made of. It could be acid, or poison, or some monstrous gaseous life form with a taste for demigods. Behind him, a beast snarled. Nico instinctively swung his sword back, and the blade connected with flesh. The creature howled in pain. Another lunged in front of him, one of the massive black wolves. Nico sliced off its head without even slowing, and its body disintegrated immediately. Nico kept running. Sweat poured down his face. His lungs burned. He glanced back just long enough to see more wolves racing after him, slavering for a D'Angelo snack plate. "Absolutely not," he told himself, but there was nowhere to go, nothing to hide behind. About 100 yards away, he spotted a ridge with some strange black ovals protruding from the surface. Volcanic outcrops, maybe? Perhaps something there could give him a bit of coverage, but he'd never make it before the wolves tore him apart. Then he glanced to his right and nearly tripped over himself in surprise. Someone was waving at him. Nestled between the nearest two hills was a white house with red trim, big bay windows, and a sloping, shingled roof. Unlike everything else in Tartarus, it didn't appear dead, rotting, or poisonous. It was just a house, like you might see anywhere in suburban America. On the front porch stood a human-looking figure, beckoning to Nico. He knew in his heart this was probably a trap, but where else was he supposed to go? His lungs burned, his eyes watered. He was losing hope as the wolves gained ground. So Nico cut to the right and pumped his legs. He could hear the wolves' paws thumping behind him. He pushed himself harder until the person on the porch was fully in view. They had shoulder-length black hair and a striking red jacket that matched the surrounding landscape. As Nico got closer, they turned and walked through the front door, which began to close. "Hey!" Nico yelled. "Wait!" He was running so fast he almost flew through the doorway. It slammed shut, just in time for the wolves to crash into it. They howled and whined outside while Nico sat panting on the floor, his back wedged against the door. Why did his lungs hurt so badly? Maybe he'd cracked his ribs in the fall, or maybe the atmosphere in Tartarus just wasn't fit for demigods. Maybe he was supposed to struggle to survive here. He glanced around at the empty room. Nothing but a bare, dusty hardwood floor and blank white walls. No other exit. Even the bay windows seemed to have disappeared from the front wall.
"About time you found me."
The voice startled Nico so badly that he jumped and banged his head on the doorknob. Clutching the tender spot on the top of his skull, he squinted at the person who had materialized across the room. She didn't look like a monster, which concerned Nico, given that he'd fallen into Tartarus. Then again, monsters came in all shapes and sizes.
Her jeans and leather boots were the same dark tone as her hair. A single gold chain looped across the front of her white blouse. Her red jacket glistened disturbingly like fresh blood. Behind her was nothing. The back wall had simply vanished, replaced by a dark void. She stared at Nico appraisingly.
Well, aren't you going to ask me who I am?
Nico rubbed the knot forming on his head.
I'm going to guess you're a goddess, seeing as you have a house in the middle of Tartarus. Is this like your vacation home, or...
It's not really my home, she said. Think of it more as a shrine, if you will. A safe haven. And until recent events, I was not allowed even that.
As she said this, her irises flared red.
My only true home is in the heart, the spirit, when balance is achieved.
The flare went out.
Impressive, said Nico.
When she rolled her eyes, he laughed. I'm serious, that was actually pretty cool.
Leave it to Nico D'Angelo to tell a goddess that they're cool.
He examined her sharp, angular face, the dark eyes, the dark hair, the obsession with balance.
You're Ethan Nakamura's mother, he decided. Nemesis.
She opened her arms wide.
In the flesh, or not, depending on how you view godhood.
Nico got to his feet. He wasn't usually one to feel starstruck or godstruck, but an unfamiliar sensation was creeping through him.
Ah, why are you here? He asked. Why did you save me?
Can't a goddess do something nice for a demigod?
Nico barked a laugh. Yeah, but it always comes with a catch. I'm not a fool, Nemesis. She stepped toward him, and the field of darkness came with her, drifting behind her body like the train of a dress. The house changed. No longer was Nico in an empty room. He stood on the parapets of Erebos, the walls of impenetrable darkness marching off in either direction. He gazed across the fields of Asphodel, toward the spires of his father's palace.
Why have you brought me here? He murmured.
But when he turned for the answer, Nemesis was gone. Instead, his father stood before him. Hades' robe swirled with ghostly afterimages of the damned. His dark beard was longer, which startled Nico, since he had seen his father only a day or so ago. But of course, gods could look like whatever they wanted. And this god wasn't his father at all.
What is this, Nemesis? Nico demanded. Why do you look like that?
The false Hades spoke with Nemesis's voice. I know what you really want, she said. I know the imbalance that exists in your heart.
As if to prove her point, Nico's heartbeat stumbled. He wondered how deeply Nemesis could see into his feelings and why she'd chosen to stand in judgment in the guise of his father.
I don't know what you mean, he said.
Nemesis, Hades, chuckled.
I have taken a greater interest in demigods since Percy Jackson advocated on behalf of us so-called minor gods to those snobs on Mount Olympus. I have come to believe that you heroes may be more interesting than I thought, and you in particular wish to right what was made wrong.
Nico's mouth tasted of ashes. But why show me this? Why my father? Nemesis swept her hand across the landscape of Erebos.
To demonstrate what you already know. Your father tries, but even here, in the place of final judgment, true fairness is so rarely achieved. The good suffer. The bad are rewarded. The gods' great system is a creaky machine. A lopsided wheel. At times, we must act individually. You must act to achieve a proper justice, just as you are doing now.
Enough, Nico said, heat flushing his cheeks. If you want to help me, get me to the doors of death. Nemesis's smile faded. Darkness swept around them, and suddenly,
she was back in her original form, staring at Nico across the bare room of her suburban Tartarus sanctuary.
"There are limits to how much I can help you," she said, "especially in Tartarus."
She moved closer to Nico, her stare burning into him.
"I am the goddess of retribution," she said. "This is the realm in which monsters regenerate after they've been disposed of by gods or demigods. All of them desire nothing but retribution, Nico."
"So wouldn't that make you more powerful here?" She frowned.
"It's the opposite. Each moment I spend here, I am torn in every direction. I can feel my body ripping apart right now."
"I can relate," Nico grumbled. His lungs hurt with every breath. He found himself leaning on his sword just to stay up. There was a brief flash of pity in the goddess's eyes.
"You have a terrible journey ahead of you, and in the short term, I sense it will cause even more injustice and misery."
"Great," groaned Nico.
"But listen to me, demigod." Her voice turned sharp and chiding. "You must endure."
She grabbed Nico's hand, and he was shocked by how warm it was. She pressed something into his palm.
"Keep these with you all the time. You will need them."
He looked at what she had given him. 3 glistening red seeds. Pomegranate seeds.
"From your stepmother's garden," Nemesis explained. "I know what they are."
Nico could feel their power radiating along the lines of his palm. He knew that as a child of Hades, he could use each one to put himself into a day-long death trance, a sort of hibernation if necessary. But why? Why was she giving him these? There was a loud thud behind him. The front door shuddered on its hinges. Outside, he could hear the wolves snarling, preparing for another assault.
"We are almost out of time," Nemesis said. "Follow the river of fire, Nico. Follow it downstream through the mist in the forest. There you will find the doors of death."
Nico jumped as the door began to splinter. Through one of the cracks flashed the baleful yellow eye of a wolf.
"I will get you away from here, Nico," said Nemesis. "But one day you will need to deal with the imbalance in your heart."
Nico closed his fingers around the pomegranate seeds, then tucked them away with the others he kept. There was much more he wanted to ask, but he also wanted to be far, far away from this place as soon as possible.
"Thank you," he said. "I appreciate the help."
Nemesis raised her hands, and the darkness began to swirl around them.
"One last thing. Beware of my mother. She only comes out during the daytime. And let's just say she is not as sympathetic to demigods as some of her children are."
"Daytime?" Nico asked. The concept made no sense to him down here, in the darkest depths of underworld. But the house disappeared, and Nemesis with it. Nico found himself standing on a ridge, the spongy red ground once again under his feet. There were no wolves or other monsters in sight, but spread across the hills in every direction were the strange black oval outcrops he'd seen from a distance. He edged closer to the nearest one and peered down at its surface.
"Ugh, gross," he said.
It was as if the land itself had a pimple. The substance wasn't rock, exactly, more like a dark, translucent membrane covering an area the size of a bathtub. And underneath, some sort of sickening yellow-green fluid was pulsing around a shadowy figure suspended within.
"What the?"
Nico made a terrible mistake, but he couldn't resist. With the tip of his sword, he poked the Tartarus zit. Predictably, the membrane burst, unleashing a geyser of goo that splattered him from head to toe.
"You've got to be kidding me."
Nico stumbled backward, landing hard on his tailbone. He watched in horror as something very much alive crawled out of the goo pit. It shook its sticky wet hair, which began to smolder and then caught fire. Its form was human, but with mismatched back legs. One shaggy and hooved like a donkey's, the other constructed of bronze. An empusa. Nico's grip tightened on his sword. He'd been kidnapped by one of these vampiric spirits after foolishly following Minus into the labyrinth, and he was in no mood to be charm-spoken to death. Taking advantage of the creature's disorientation, he scrambled forward and drove his blade through its chest. The creature wailed.
I just regenerated,
she screamed. Come on! Then she crumpled into clumps of dust that broke apart in the goo. Immediately, the fluid began to ooze back into the pit, and the membrane began weaving itself together. Wonderful, said Nico to himself. Monsters regenerate even faster in Tartarus. He scanned his surroundings with a mounting sense of dread. The landscape was covered with these regeneration zit pits. He had to keep moving. The only thing that gave him a little bit of hope was the sight of a glowing red ribbon of flames in the distance, threading across the plains. At least Nemesis had deposited Nico within sight of the river he was supposed to follow. The fiery Phlegethon. Nico pulled his leather jacket tighter and started walking. Chapter 17. Nico had no idea where he was relative to the staging area he'd stumbled on before, but he figured Nemesis must have dropped him someplace far, far away, because this part of Tartarus was empty. The land seemed to stretch on forever. Nico was thankful that Nemesis had given him some guidance, because if he hadn't kept himself to the left of the River Phlegethon, he would have had no idea where to go. After hours of walking on the strange marshy ground, Nico was exhausted, hungry. His feet ached and his lungs burned from the sooty air. Something else was happening to him too. The world around him, it seemed to be shifting. That was the only way he could describe it. He'd be staring into the distance, where mist clung to a dark expanse of forest, and for the briefest of moments, the horizon would leap backward like a mirage. The landscape before him took on sharper edges, with colors so terrifyingly intense that they hurt his eyes. The land itself seemed to be rising and falling as if it were breathing. Or was Nico imagining that? He had no one to compare notes with, so he kept walking. The river flowed smoothly past him, and if it hadn't been made of pure fire, he would have wished for a boat. Anything that could keep him moving toward the bottom of Tartarus and closer to his goal. Sometimes, he heard cries in the distance, definitely not human, full of rage and defiance. Perhaps they were creatures awakening in the darkness, crawling from the regeneration pits, ready to head back to the world above, or to join Gaia's army. He remembered what Nemesis had said. All of them desire nothing but retribution. He forced himself to keep walking. The fate of the whole world depended on him finding and closing the doors of death. As the forest grew closer, the temperature dropped. Nico zipped up his leather jacket and kept his hands in his pockets. But soon he was shivering. This shouldn't have been possible with a flaming river literally right next to him. But somehow the closeness of the Phlegethon didn't cut through the cold. If anything, it made things worse. A part of Nico's mind begged him to jump in, to experience the warmth it would provide for a few seconds before he burned up. Stop that, he told himself out loud. Don't let this place break you down. But it was, wasn't it? The deeper Nico went into Tartarus, the more it sanded off the edges of his sanity. He was now convinced he was full-on hallucinating. The ground beneath him was definitely breathing, albeit very slowly. And those dark regenerating blisters were now spread so thickly in his path that he had to squeeze between them in order to keep moving. He felt like a mite crawling across a giant stubbly face. Once he heard the sickening pop as a blister burst open somewhere nearby, he stopped, his sword glowing gently at his side. But whatever monster had emerged, he heard it scampering away, heading upriver. Nico's throat was so dry that his tongue was stuck to the roof of his mouth. He had to reach in with a finger to pry it off, which only caused him to break out in a deep cough. And meanwhile, the River Phlegethon just kept rolling along. It moved like water. To Nico's delirious mind, it had even started to look like water. But it was fire, right?
Nico searched his memories for information about the Phlegethon. For the first time in years, he thought about his old mythomagic cards. Was there any lore in that game about what would happen if a mortal drank from the River of Fire? He couldn't remember. He couldn't believe he was even considering it. Then Tartarus shuddered. The ground shifted sideways, throwing Nico off his feet. He tumbled to the bank of the Phlegethon, his hands digging into the fine sand. Ash and cinder swirled around him, making him cough up sour mucus. Huh? The Phlegmathon, he thought. Bet I'm the first person to think of that. Up close, the sound of the river was less like roaring fire and more like gentle babbling. It seemed to call out to him, as if begging him to drink. No. No, he couldn't. He hauled himself upright. When he turned again toward the dark forest, it was much closer, no more than a stone's throw away. And in the green fog, between the twisted dark branches of the trees, thousands upon thousands of tiny, glowing eyes stared back at him. He couldn't have cried out if he wanted to. His throat was too parched. He blinked away the soot, and when he looked up again, the forest's eyes had vanished. The ground beneath him, though, was still heaving restlessly, like it was alive. He froze. Oh, Hades. He tried to gulp down his fear. He knelt and put his hand on the ground, his fingers sinking into the fine sand. Underneath was a layer of, not soil exactly, not marsh, more like hide. It all came to him suddenly. Tartarus was not just a place. Tartarus was a living being, the sleeping body of a primordial god. And here Nico sat, right on top of its skin. He sobbed, overwhelmed by how far he was from home. The thought made him cry harder because he wasn't even sure where home was. Camp Half-Blood, Camp Jupiter? At this point, he would take either one because they were both better than this. High above him, a dark shape soared through the poison clouds heading north. Its wingspan had to be 40 or 50 feet. More creatures followed it, like colossal geese in formation, and Nico assumed they were going to join up with Gaia's forces. What had Nico been thinking? Why had he come down here alone? No one even knew that he'd ventured into Tartarus, and even if someone did, they couldn't help him. Tartarus wasn't the kind of place he just strolled into. He was going to die down here, wasn't he? What happened to a demigod who died in Tartarus? Could they even reach the afterlife? Or would they be trapped here forever? Maybe drowning in one of those covered goo pits, unable to break free? The ground rose again, shuddering as if the entire landscape was tossing and turning in its sleep. Nico was so thirsty. He stared at the burning water. He wanted to drink so badly. For some reason, his mind went back to Dante's Divine Comedy, which his mom had read to him when he was younger. Being Italian, she'd insisted that Nico learn at least some Dante by heart. She'd read those poems to him at bedtime, stories about descending into the inferno and clawing your way up again into the light of purgatory. Almost like she'd been preparing him to know the truth about his father, or preparing him for this journey. Somewhere in those cantos, there'd been a moment when Dante faced a wall of fire. His guide, Virgil, had convinced him to walk through it, despite his fears.
Qui può essere tormento, ma non morte.
Here you can be tormented, but not die. It was wishful thinking that the Phlegethon would work like that. Then again, Tartarus would eventually kill him anyway, wouldn't it? Monsters he could fight, but thirst, that would be slower, more painful, and just as lethal. Nico knelt. Hesitantly, he touched the surface of the water. It was freezing. He yanked his fingers back, only to discover that his skin was still very much intact and very much not on fire. He waited a few seconds, certain that his pain receptors would kick in, or that he would combust. But no. His hand ached from the cold, but there were no burn marks. He removed his jacket and set it aside. Here goes nothing,
he thought. Then his thirst took over. He cupped his hands, dipped them in the icy flames, and brought the water to his lips. The effect was instantaneous. He choked and gagged, the fire raging down his throat and into his belly. He clutched at his stomach, his vision doubled, and he was certain this was the end. This was how he'd go out, curled up next to the river of fire, from which he'd drunk like a fool. But the pain began to fade. Nico lay there, gasping, and his exhaustion began to slip away. The soles of his feet no longer ached. His head felt clearer. Nico sat up and the burning was all gone. Not only that, he no longer felt thirsty. Had just a small sip of the phlegethon done all that? He decided not to question it any further. It was a win-win. He wasn't dead, and he'd just figured out that he could survive if he drank from a literal river of fire. Nico grabbed his leather jacket and slipped it on, then stood up and brushed himself off. The forest awaited him, as did the doors of death. So, the son of Hades kept going. Days passed, or maybe it was hours, or weeks, or months for that matter. Nemesis had warned him about her mother, who only came out during the day, but Nico had no sense of when one day might be passing into another down here. The light did not change. The weather was always hellish, with an 80% chance of noxious clouds and scattered monsters. Tartarus simply pressed down on his spirit as Nico moved deeper and deeper, following the phlegethon as it cut through the forest. He went as long as he could between sips from the river. He had no idea if there were any long-term effects from drinking fire, but the river water seemed to heal any exhaustion or pain that Nico was experiencing. It did not help him with the mental ramifications of being in Tartarus. He missed the sun and solid food. He missed Camp Half-Blood and the satyrs and Chiron's stern fatherly voice, and even the way Mr. D whined and complained as if he were being murdered continuously day in and day out. Nico missed the other demigods, like Percy and Annabeth, and Jason, even if he wasn't sure they missed him. It didn't help that the forest, thick with a smelly, sulfurous fog, was so thoroughly unlike any woods Nico had ever been in. The trees contorted around one another, and the branches seemed to bend ever so slowly in Nico's direction, even though the trunks looked completely dead, rotten on the inside, and falling apart. Nico could not see above the treetops because of the impossible fog, but he heard creatures flying above, whooping and shrieking. Bushes like tumbleweeds, but with much sharper thorns and burrs, clogged the forest floor, and Nico often had to use his sword to clear his way, which sent small lizard rat creatures scurrying away from him. The glowing eyes were back, too, always floating in the shadows at the edge of his vision, always watching him. He wondered why the owners of those eyes never approached or attacked. What were they waiting for? There were far more of them than there was of him. Nico stayed on constant guard, awaiting the inevitable, and the anticipation was perhaps worse than if he'd actually been attacked. He was so focused on the eyes, he barely realized that he'd reached the far side of the forest. The fog suddenly lifted, and he was met with an unending and impenetrable wall of darkness. It stretched in every direction. As far as he could see, even the river Phlegethon made a sharp left turn and wended off to the north, as if it didn't want to deal with that darkness. Nico stopped and stared, uncertain of what to do. How could Tartarus just end like that? The ground below him continued for a few feet, so he took a step, then another. Then a narrow rift appeared in the darkness, a vertical fissure that revealed a dirt pathway sloping down gently until it ended at a black stone archway, not unlike the masonry on the parapets of Erebos. It looked like a doorway. Was it the doorway? The idea was appealing. What if the doors of death weren't some huge gates guarded by countless monsters from Gaia's army, but just a simple arch hidden in the middle of nowhere? Nico didn't want to get too excited, yet it was hard to contain himself. He moved forward onto the dirt path. He tested it with a single footstep. It did not give away. The walls of darkness on either side did not close in on him. Okay, he thought. Feels real enough. Another step. Another. He was halfway across when he felt compelled to look behind himself for a second. The phlegethon cast an eerie glow over the trees. Nico was afraid to leave the only source of water that had been keeping him alive, but he had to. He felt sure this was where he was supposed to be. Near the end of the path, he noticed something about the archway that he couldn't have seen from a distance. The black stone was moving, not shifting as a whole, but the arch appeared to be made of millions of tiny, well, he didn't know what he was looking at, particles of dust, quicksand. He reached out to touch it, then jerked his hand away. No, he thought. Don't do that. Something is wrong. Maybe he wasn't at the doors of death after all. He turned again, looking wistfully back up the trail. Should he drink once more of the river? Maybe rest a while and think about this? The forest didn't seem quite so creepy now. The voice he heard forced his hand. It came from the rift at the top of the trail. An indistinct grumbling getting closer and definitely headed in Nico's direction. Whatever it was, Nico estimated it was only seconds from appearing, seeing him, and blocking his only exit. With no other option, he darted through the archway, ducking to one side behind the nearest cover he could find, a tall tree with bark as black as night. Beyond, in the gloom, was an area that looked like an overgrown garden. The voice got louder. Nico hid behind his tree just as something emerged from the archway. It was as if all of Nico's blood instantly chilled, and when he slowly let out a breath, he could see it condensing in the air. Mother, she's intolerable, said the voice. Why do we have to listen to her? From deeper in the garden, another voice answered. It must have been Mother, and her tone was harsh and unforgiving. I don't know why my children are so disobedient, she said. I created you. I gave you life. I gave you purpose. And what do I get in return? There was a terrible pause. Then the first voice said, love and affection. Disrespect, shrieked Mother. Nico moved slowly, turning his head until his right eye could just peek around the edge of the trunk. What he saw twisted his heart around his stomach. Mother was enormous, at least three times the size of an adult human. She was swathed in smoke and ash that swirled around her like she was the eye of a hurricane. Her dress was the deepest black Nico had ever seen, glittering with the twinkles of entire galaxies. Her face was an indistinct mass of darkness, but her eyes burned with the fury of twin supernovas. She sat on a Stygian iron throne at the center of a circle of black trees. Dark gravel paths wended between topiaries that looked like clouds of ink, every branch, leaf, and flower competing to be the darkest thing in the garden. And in the distance, at the edge of Nico's vision, rose some kind of onyx structure, perhaps a temple or a palace. The other figure stood before Mother's seat. He was tall, but more human size, with a dark skin tone and shoulder-length black braids. He wore a sweeping black coat that shimmered in mesmerizing patterns, making Nico's eyes feel heavy. No one is disrespecting you, Mother, he said, his tone guarded. But Gaia is not our master. Why should we? Mother unfurled a set of wings that stretched from one end of the tree circle to the other, their leathery surface swirled with shadows. Must you always disagree with me? After that last debacle with Kronos, which I told you not to get involved in, you wouldn't even be safe if I hadn't let you stay here, Hypnos. Involuntarily, Nico grunted with surprise. The god Hypnos, who had put the entire island of Manhattan to sleep during Kronos' assault on Olympus, apparently lived here now, in his mother's basement. Mother's wings quivered, dripping liquid shadow from their spiny tips. We are being watched, she said. Her terrible eyes scanned the area where Nico was hiding. He jerked back and dropped to the ground, his heart racing. He couldn't get caught, not this close to the end, and he had to be close. He'd done as Nemesis told him and followed the River Phlegethon, unless Nemesis had guided him into a trap. Nico stayed as still as possible. The archway he'd entered was only a few steps away. Maybe if he sprinted, he could get through it, back up the path and into the forest. He never got to find out. Tendrils of smoke wrapped around him and abruptly lifted him into the air.
No!
He cried as he was yanked backward across the garden, then spun around to find himself face to face with her. Up close, her visage wasn't just dark and indistinct. Except for those piercing eyes, it was a churning void, a black hole devouring all light and matter. It was pure hopelessness made real.
Now who are you?
Her supernova eye seemed to be peeling back Nico's soul, layer by layer. Her swirling debris cloud of darkness held him fast. But Nico didn't struggle. He suddenly didn't want to. He was paralyzed.
I asked you a question, she said, and her voice had gravity, as if it might pull the answers right out of his skull. Mother, leave him alone, said Hypnos with a tired sigh. It's clear that he's harmless.
Harmless, Nico echoed, exhaustion spreading through his bones.
Definitely harmless. Hypnos, stop feeling sorry for him, Mother commanded. Why are you always taking pity on every stray you find?
Sorry, Hypnos said, lowering his head. Mother pulled Nico closer, and he swallowed a scream. He'd never been so terrified. And yet he couldn't fight. Could barely even think.
You aren't a monster, she cooed softly. And you aren't a god.
I could be, he said dreamily.
The god of bad decisions, perhaps.
Mother sounded amused by her own joke. Because you made a mistake coming into my home. Nico felt his rage stirring until he thought his heart would burst. He hated being confined, and he hated being ridiculed. But he couldn't move. His eyelids were made of lead.
How did you get here?
Mother mused, looking him over like he was a specimen of some invasive species.
This realm is protected from all who don't belong, unless...
Ah, a demigod. Nico smiled weakly. He tried to look smug and unconcerned, but he doubted he was pulling it off.
You got me,
he said. She cackled, her voice radiating malice.
You are terrified, child, as you should be. Fear is the highest form of respect you can give me.
It is best to stay afraid of Nyx, grumbled Hypnos from somewhere behind him.
I've certainly learned that.
Nyx. Nico hadn't heard that name in ages, but he knew her by reputation. She was the goddess most other gods were terrified of. No one ever risked making her angry. Even Zeus refused to mess with her. She was the goddess of night, born from chaos, and one of the original inhabitants of the universe. Now he understood Nemesis's warning to be wary of her mother. Nico had come to Tartarus looking for a way to stop Gaia from rising, and he'd walked straight into the lair of a goddess who was just as old, powerful, and dangerous.
I see you are putting the pieces together, said Nyx, her voice thick with amusement.
No need to explain your parentage.
I've already figured it out. There is only one father whose children could survive this long in Tartarus. And there was only one reason the entrance to my home would reveal itself. It sensed a kindred spirit.
The darkness swirled tightly around Nico, pushing all the blood to his head.
What an interesting case you are,
Nyx continued.
A son of Hades. Yet you live in the mortal world, don't you? I can smell the stench of daylight on you.
Hypnos tutted.
Oh, Mother doesn't like that.
I don't. Like that, she confirmed.
Do you know why, son of Hades? Nico had to use nearly all his energy just to shake his head.
We are all born into our own natures, she said.
I, created from chaos, was given unto the night. It is what and who I am.
Who are you?
Nico D'Angelo.
He gasped softly.
How do I know your name?
Nix feigned outrage. We are in Tartarus, you silly child.
Everything here is stripped to its truest, rawest form. The longer you remain with me, the more clearly I can see you, and the less you can hide.
She brought Nico so close, he thought he would pit forward into the void of her face.
Have you ever looked at yourself, Nico? Because I see the truth. You belong down here in the darkness. It is your nature, and yet you fight it every day. Must you be so obstinate? Must you ignore the obvious?
No,
he said, squirming against Nix's hold.
I know where I'm supposed to be.
A terrible laughter echoed from the empty space where her mouth should have been.
You are hopelessly confused. Those who are confused end up with me.
They do, said Hypnos. They always do.
Night is when all beings stumble and go astray,
Nix said, her voice now soothing.
But it is also when you can face the darkest truth. You must stop entertaining this notion that you can escape who you are. I will help you choose, Nico D'Angelo. I will make things so much simpler. Choose.
Her last word was a blast of darkness, and Nico could feel his soul breaking into dust, his identity being shorn away and pulled into Nix's gravity. He couldn't breathe. Hopelessness radiated through every part of his body. He believed this was the end, which was precisely when the giants arrived. Chapter 18.
Excuse me, a voice called out. Is there any way we could borrow that demigod?
Nico forced himself not to pass out, even though he wanted to chase after unconsciousness. He tried to twist around to see who was speaking, but he didn't need to. Nix promptly dropped him, and his back hit the ground, knocking the air clean out of him. He turned his head to see two nearly identical giants, both 12 feet tall, and with snakes where their feet should be, but otherwise, much more like humans than he expected. They were dressed in identical tie-dyed overalls. Who made overalls for giants? On top of white t-shirts, both of them had their hair tied back in thick braids that glittered with coins, though the giant on the left had green hair and the one on the right had purple. Nico thought they looked like Tartarus versions of Pokemon trainers. Nix hissed.
Who do you think you are barging in here? I am Nix, the goddess of night.
Oh, we know who you are, said the giant with purple hair.
He pointed at his twin.
That's Otis, and I'm the Big F. Otis made a face. Dude, I don't know about that stage name.
The Big F, said Hypnos. What does the F stand for?
The purple-haired giant put his hands on his hips and raised his chin proudly.
Ephialtes.
Hypnos looked up at his mother, whose supernova eyes flickered as if she were short-circuiting.
Does it not make sense?
Said Ephialtes.
You know, because the way you say my name is...
No, we understand, said Nix.
Yeah, Hypnos said. There's certainly a logic to it, but... The giant looked down at Nico. The demigod shrugged. It could use some more thought.
I told you to workshop it more, said Otis. How are we supposed to get our big break if everyone thinks your name is ridiculous?
Dude. Pardon me for interrupting this clown show, said Nix. But what are you two doing here?
Right, said Ephialtes. We're here for the demigod.
The air around Nix turned several degrees colder.
Not now, she said. He's
occupied.
Gaia wants him, said Otis. Hypnos frowned at his mother, as if to say, see, I told you she was trouble.
Gaia,
Nix repeated. Yup, said Ephialtes.
For what possible reason?
Ephialtes smiled from ear to ear. Oh, we're trying to trap the seven demigod from the prophecy.
Nico pushed himself up on his elbows.
What? We're gonna kidnap you and use you as bait, said Otis. Then when your friends come to rescue you, we'll just wipe out everyone at once. It's brilliant, said Ephialtes. And it will definitely help us go viral.
Nico looked at Nyx in panic, then back at the giants. He thought about trying to make a break for it, but he was deep in Tartarus, surrounded by four immortals with barely enough energy to stand. Maybe if he could goad them into fighting one another, he could sneak away.
I can see you plotting, Nico,
said Nyx, her voice syrupy.
But there is no escape for you.
I thought you resented Gaia.
Nico turned to Hypnos. You called her intolerable. Why do you take orders from her?
Hypnos shook his head.
It's pointless to try dividing us, demigod.
Does that mean we can have him now? Asked Otis. Gaia will reward you for your cooperation, Nyx.
Nyx didn't frown exactly, since she had no mouth, but Nico could sense displeasure in the darkening churn of her face.
I do not need rewards. And it is one thing for me to support my primordial sister's awakening. It is another thing for you to barge into my home and demand.
Nico wasn't going to wait around for the result of this negotiation. He sprinted for the archway. Hypnos shouted. The giants cried out in alarm as Nico dove between Otis's snake legs and came up running. He was almost to the exit when two new shapes closed ranks to block his path. Horses with bodies of pitch-black void, just like Nyx, their disturbingly sharp silvery teeth gnashing at Nico. Giant vampire horses.
Nope,
Nico cried and veered into the woods. The horses whinnied.
The giants bellowed, get 'em! And no, dude, you get 'em!
But Nyx's voice rose above the din.
Let him try, she said. Go ahead, Nico D'Angelo.
Try your best to escape.
Nico knew she was toying with him, but he didn't have much of a choice. He ran as fast as he could, following the perimeter of the garden. A dark wall hemmed it in, much too tall to climb, made of seething ash particles like the archway. Nico considered trying to shadow travel through it, but even if he'd had the concentration and the energy, something told him shadow travel in Nyx's sanctuary would be a very bad idea. He kept running, his clothes snagging on briars and tree branches, until he stopped short, staring at a house that should not exist. Nico had seen so many terrible things over the course of this journey through Tartarus, but this was what broke him. The living house towered above him, its many gables and overlooks and bay windows shifting from one shape to another, each one like an eye, dilating, constricting, swiveling to focus on him. Nico could sense them inspecting him, peering deep into his soul. The black shutters snapped hungrily. The double doors yawned, inviting him in past bristling rows of black teeth. He dropped to his knees. As the house shifted and shuddered, Nico realized what it was made of. Like the archway, like the garden wall, the house was constructed from black particles. But these particles weren't dust or ash or stone, as Nico had thought. Each and every speck was an insect. Billions of tiny wings, pincers, and stingers swarmed together, somehow forming the shape of the mansion, and not collapsing. Nico knew deep in his heart that he should not be looking at this, that no one should be looking at this. Suddenly, he felt a cool hand under his chin. Nyx lifted Nico's head and tenderly wiped the tears from his cheeks.
I told you, there was no escape,
she said gently, almost as if she pitied him.
What is this place? He asked. The Mansion of Night. It is my home.
Nico whimpered.
Why design something so awful? You have seen nothing but the smallest part. You mortals have a phrase for that, the tip of the iceberg. It is the purest expression of who I am.
He sobbed and shut his eyes, but he could still envision it in his mind. He imagined himself breaking down, crumbling into a billion swarming insects that would slowly be absorbed by that house.
"Your filter has burned away,"
Nick said softly. "Few demigods have ever entered Tartarus. Fewer still have seen my home. The mist clings to you, trying to protect your sanity from the true appearance of things." She caressed Nico's face.
"But now you can see it all, can't you, child?"
"Yes," he said, wishing it wasn't true. Suddenly, it didn't seem like such a bad thing to be drawn into the black hole of Nyx's gaze, to be crushed into nothingness by her gravitational pull. It might hurt less than seeing the world like this. Nothing but swarms of dark, ravenous bugs, pushed into whatever patterns pleased the goddess of night. Nyx lowered herself until her head was level with Nico's.
"Good. I am going to give you over to the giants, because I believe in what Gaia is doing. But if there is any future in which you survive, in which you and your little demigod friends aren't destroyed, then we will continue this conversation, Nico D'Angelo."
She rose and spread her smoky wings to their full span.
"I will make you choose your true nature. You won't be able to escape it."
Nico may have whimpered. He was too terrified to even be ashamed. Nyx turned to the giants.
"Take him."
Behind Otis and Ephialtes, the massive fanged stallion snorted and pawed the ground. Nyx raised her hand.
"Settle down, Shade Shadow. There will be other flesh for you to devour."
Hypnos took their reins and led them away as Otis loomed over Nico. The giant's huge hands wrapped around the demigod's ribcage and lifted him from the ground. But Nico was too tired, too scared to resist.
"Did you bring it?" Otis asked his brother. Ephialtes scoffed. "Of course I did. What kind of giant do you think I am?"
The big F snapped his big fingers. An enormous bronze jar poofed into existence on the gravel path. As Ephialtes pried open the lid, Nico realized the jar was just the right size to fit.
"Well, him. Thanks for making this so easy, kid," Otis said, lifting him over the mouth of the jar. "I can't promise this won't hurt."
"Goodbye, Nico D'Angelo,"
Nyx called.
"You may not remember our meeting. Your tiny mind may crack under the strain of what you have seen. But if you somehow survive, it will be delicious to see what you become."
Otis stuffed him inside the jar, and Nico's hand closed around the pomegranate seeds that Nemesis had given him. Had she known this would happen? Maybe she'd been part of the trap? The trap that would end them all. The idea that his friends might try to rescue him brought him no comfort. As Nico was sealed in the darkness of the bronze jar, only one thought persisted in his shattered mind. "I failed them all."